In early March 1943, the first action of the Czechoslovak foreign contingent on the Eastern Front during the Second World War took place around the Ukrainian village of Sokolovo. Still today, one can see depictions of the action in memorials and names, such as in the West Bohemian town of Sokolov, Prague's Sokolovska Street, or in the mosaics in Florence metro station. Most of these memorials are the result of communist propaganda after the war. However, this does not take away from the courage of the men and women who fought in the battle. Many of them recall their experiences in interviews with Czech radio. After Czechoslovakia fell apart in early 1939 and was dissected between the surrounding states, many Czechoslovaks were intent on finding their way abroad and get the chance to fight the Germans. Some made their way westwards, while others crossed through Carpathian Ruthenia into the USSR or into Poland, where they volunteered to fight the Germans after they invaded the country in September 1939. One of those who chose this latter option was Major General in retirement, Oldřich Kvapil. He was a young man at the time, and together with 27 other of his compatriots, they were accepted by the Polish Army's Czechoslovak Legion and sent to the city of Ternopil in today's western Ukraine. As the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact came into effect and the Soviets began occupying eastern Poland, Kvapil and his unit started moving southwards. However, then they were encountered by the Red Army.
We were about 10 kilometers from Ternopil when we were encircled by a massive group of Soviet tanks. Luckily, our commander, the Slovak Lieutenant Stik, was a professor who taught Russian at university. He told them that we were Czechoslovaks. They took our weapons and ammunition and sent us back to Ternopil.
Germany and the Soviet Union were partners at that time, and the eagerness to fight was not welcomed by the Red Army officers who encountered the Czechoslovak troops. The men, as many other Czechoslovaks who crossed the border from Carpathian Ruthenia, were sent into Soviet internment camps. Historian Eduard Stehlík explained the details to Czech radio.
There was basically one group which fell into Soviet incarceration during the occupation of Poland on September the 18th, 1939. Another group were Czechoslovaks who fled Carpathian Ruthenia after it was occupied by the Hungarians. These people were incarcerated for illegal border crossing and sentenced to many years in Gulag labor camps. Those who survived started being offered the chance to fight in a Czechoslovak military contingent during 1942.
A Czechoslovak military contingent started being formed. Eventually, it would grow to the size of a corps. But at this stage, it was just around a battalion, numbering three companies. They were finally sent into action in the final days of the Third Battle of Kharkov in March 1943. The battle was a successful counteroffensive launched by the Germans. It took advantage of the overextended Red Army lines as the Soviets pushed west into the Ukraine after their victory at Stalingrad earlier that year. The battle would also result in forming the Kursk salient that would see what has until recently been regarded as the largest tank battle in history. Major General in retirement Miroslav Šmoldas was part of the Czechoslovak battalion at the time, and he shared his memories with Czech radio.
We travelled by train for something like 3 weeks. The front kept extending further away from us as the Soviets advanced, until we stopped somewhere near Kharkiv. Then we marched for 10 nights, something like 350 kilometers, until we reached the city.
The Czechoslovaks would only see action in the closing stage of the battle, where they were sent in to plug one of the holes that had formed in the Red Army front line. As so many battles in the east, it would turn out to be a bloody engagement. The unit eventually received the order to take position around the village of Sokolovo, which lies south of Kharkov. Miroslav Šmoldas again.
The terrain was quite flat. Ukraine is like that. There were a few small woods around. Sokolovo lay in a sort of depression around the river, with the land rising to our rear lines in the north and to the side of the Germans in the south. It was a typical village, as any around there. It was relatively untouched by war, but the civilians disappeared as soon as the fighting commenced.
The troops felt they would have to prove themselves to show their worth. They were the only foreign unit on the Eastern Front fighting on the Soviet side at the time. The Soviet press and radio had reported on their deployment to the front. Furthermore, as they arrived, they received news of an heroic stand of a platoon of the Red Army's 78th Guards Rifle Regiment. This put all the more pressure on them.
In front of us stood a village held by the 79th Guards Regiment of Colonel Bilutin. That regiment had 70 soldiers and a few tanks. They held that village, called Taranovka, for several days and gave us the chance to prepare our defenses. The Germans eventually drove them out of Taranovka, and our first contact came when they clashed with our reconnaissance. They came back and told us what we were facing. They were SS divisions, Totenkopf, I think, and Liebstandart Adolf Hitler, the SS Panzer divisions, and some other division, very experienced troops.
The Czechoslovaks waited for the inevitable attack. Then, around midday, some 35 tanks came out of the wood on the horizon, while to the left of the Czechoslovak positions, a platoon of infantry advanced towards them. The village soon turned to flames, and the battle commenced. The commander of the Czechoslovak battalion, Ludwik Svoboda, who would later become president, wanted to send in Soviet tanks to help the defenders. However, the ice had turned to wet sludge, and the tanks could not cross the terrain. Instead, a 42-man platoon under the leadership of Sergeant Hinek Vorac moved in to support their compatriots in the village. Colonel in retirement of Ruthenian descent, Nikolai Kibarich, was an ordinary soldier and a member of Vorac's platoon at the time.
Suddenly, I heard Vorac shout, "At the double!" We crossed a stream and suddenly machine gun fire. I didn't know whether I should shoot because I could not see anyone. We were about 100 meters from Sokolovo and suddenly we see the Germans through the flames. We keep running and a friend of mine falls. I start shooting and don't stop to help him because he must keep going forward. Then we reached Sokolovo. Now a soldier is trained to keep fighting if they lose sight of their commander. I could not find Vorac, but I kept going. I reached the village church and saw German armored vehicles with openings from which flamethrowers stuck out and were shooting out fire.
The company, which was holding Sokolovo, was led by 1st Lieutenant Otakar Jarosz, who led around 300 men. He held the village throughout the day, and as the evening hours approached and it began to get dark, Battalion Commander Ludwik Svoboda gave him the order to retreat from the village. Jarosz kept on fighting and was eventually killed in action. According to eyewitness accounts, the commander, wounded on his chest and head, ran out of a building, gun in hand, and was driven over by a German tank. He would posthumously receive the Hero of the Soviet Union medal, the first foreign soldier to receive the highest Russian commendation. Nikolai Kubarich managed to survive, his wounded leg being a ticket out of the thick of battle.
I could not keep advancing. I could hear German all around me and did not want to be surrounded, so I thought I'd go back the same way we had entered the village. However, that was impossible because the Germans were there too. My leg was all swollen and bloody, and it was getting dark. Suddenly, I ran into an officer who asked, "Where are you going? Are you wounded?" I said, "Yes, sir, I am." He asked me which company I was from and directed me to where my comrades were.
He was treated by the Czechoslovak female nurses, who were part of the battalion. Four men of the 42 in his platoon survived the battle. Sergeant Vorac was not among them. The retreat continued throughout the night, accompanied by heavy fighting. The main task of the Czechoslovak contingent was to prevent the Germans from crossing the Mža River around the village. However, German orders were limited to taking Sokolovo until another nearby village was taken. One of the nurses who were part of the Czechoslovak battalion was the 22-year-old Volhynian Czech Maria Kvapilová-Pišlová. Speaking to Czech radio, she described her experiences of the counterattack on the village that took place a few days later on March 9th.
Na 9. jsme dostali rozkaz, aby jsme prostě šli proti útoku.
On the 9th, we got the order to attack Sokolovo with the support of the Soviets and the 3rd Company. We went over the river in wide formation. When we got close to Sokolovo, we encountered very heavy fire from the defenders. There was nowhere to hide on that frozen river. The first of our soldiers started to get wounded and we got the order to retreat. We started grabbing the wounded and moving them out of the crossfire and retreated back to our village, Artyukovka. I saw one of my comrades, Greta, crying. I asked, "What is it?" She said, "My husband stayed there." Another was also in tears. My brother stayed there. It was very hard. We had a lot of wounded and we retreated back to our Artyukovka.
The attack was not completely in vain. The Germans also suffered losses. 2 days later, Czechoslovak radio operators listening in on German communications found out they were planning an attack, which was prevented by subsequent Russian artillery fire. Nevertheless, German breakthroughs south of Kharkov were now threatening to cut off the Czechoslovak battalion, and orders therefore came for a tactical retreat. There was little prospect of survival if they were to be captured. As citizens of the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, they would likely be shot for treason. This was the fate of the wounded Czechoslovaks who had been treated in Kharkov after the city was captured on March 14th. Despite the forced retreat, the Czechoslovak battalion had fulfilled its mission not to let a single tank through. A few weeks later, members of the unit were invited to Moscow. Maria Kvapilová-Pišlová was one of them.
When we arrived to Moscow, our General Svoboda was waiting there for us. He told me, "Listen, it's good that you are alive because I'd be locked up somewhere if you weren't. I vowed to get all our girls through this." I remember they promoted me there. They could not find the right epaulette, but one of them said that there are these chairs at a nearby hotel with things that could pass as rank insignia. So he got these items somehow, put them on my shoulder and, hey, I was a private.
The unit was soon transferred to Novochopyorsk in southern Russia and expanded to a brigade, receiving tanks, armoured cars and artillery. In October, it was sent to Kiev to take part in the operation recapturing the city as the Soviets advanced following the victory at Kursk. It was just one in many battles the Czechoslovaks would fight as the Red Army front moved ever closer westwards, eventually culminating for them in the Battle of Dukla Pass as they moved into Slovakia in late 1944. While they would repeatedly prove their worth, it was Sokolovo that was the battle where they initially showed their mettle, ensuring continued existence and eventual expansion of their unit into what was the largest Czechoslovak Exile Forces contingent in World War II.